David Lee Roth, 92.3 Free FM.
David Lee Roth no ar. Você sente a energia. É o David no rádio às 6 da manhã. You are connected to David Lee Roth. Prepare for combustion.
Roth Radio, DLR in the house, and I have a very special guest on the telephone. His name is Triple H. He's the 10-time world champion and one of the biggest stars in the WWE. Triple H, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good, man. How about yourself?
Hey, where are you calling us from?
I am actually in Massachusetts right now.
Oh, okay, so we're on the same time frame here.
Yeah, not too far away.
And are you traveling? Are you working? Is this part of a tour that you're doing?
No, I actually had a day off. I have some family up here, and I'm about to head out to L.A. in the morning.
How many times do you actually, quote-unquote, put on a show, Triple H, in a given year? How many matches do you find yourself participating in?
We do about 220 shows a year, 220 events a year, so we're pretty active. We're kind of like, we're kind of like the rock band that never stops touring, you know?
Absolutely. It's closer to the Willie Nelson tour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've just never stopped. I feel like I'm his age sometimes, too.
And I was going to say, which of your knees hurts the most?
usually my left one, but you never know, you know? It depends on the day.
And how long have you been doing this, Triple H?
I've been doing this for about just under 15 years.
That's a long time for this kind of a brutal sport, and it's also it's an entertainment. Which do you consider it more? Is it more of a sport for you or more of an entertainment?
I think it's, you know, it depends on how you look at it. It's definitely entertainment, but the physicality of it is very real. I mean, you know, what people see us do on TV, you know, I'll have people say, God, I can't believe you do that, or you guys get thrown around like that. But what they don't understand is when we do it in their town one night, and then the next night we're in another town doing it again, and it's that constant grind that gets you. So the physicality of it for us is huge. I think most people look at us as, you know, just like they would an action film or an action television show, we're entertainment.
Yeah, but action figures, you know, the fellows who are in the movies and in the television go out of their way to tell us that they do all their own stunts and that they really do know how to shoot the gun, drive the boat, wrestle the guy to the floor, that they really can knock somebody out with a samurai sword. And I'm finding that folks like yourself in wrestling entertainment are very easy to say, hey, it's entertainment, but you have to be an extraordinary athlete to do this. Is that true?
You do, and that's true, but the fact is, Dave, I actually don't do my own stunts when I'm in the ring. There's a really quick edit, and you don't see it, but they bring in a guy who looks just like me. He takes the big flip, and then I just come in and make the expressions. That's all.
I know. You're like Lassie. There's three of you,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. You can't see the cuts. It's live. We're just very fast with the cuts. You know?
Extraordinary. What part does the referee play in the ring, Triple H? Is he a part of the production? Are you guys communicating with each other, or is he just kind of a side bet who's always just there?
No, he's definitely part of it. You know, it's what we do is not only put on a match and tell a story non-verbally is what a match really is us telling a story but without words. The referee, you know, it's still a television show and things have to go on time. And, you know, if the show's going to go off the air at 11 o'clock, you have to be done at 11 o'clock. So the referee is kind of giving you the information you need to make sure that you get things done right.
Fascinating. And do you have a series of referees that travel with you? Are these familiar faces, or is there a different fellow in each city?
Yeah, no. We have. You know, we're like a little touring, rock band, I guess, if you would. And we kind of have our own referees that travel with us, and our own production people, and our own, you know, our own basically everything. We're kind of self-contained unit.
Oh, it's super-sized. You know, for those of us, who are not familiar, I'm familiar with it, but for those of you listening in all the different cities, and particularly around the world, we're on the internet here as well, is that this is on par with Rolling Stones-sized productions now.
Yeah, it's huge. We have, 18 tractor-trailer trucks on our TV.
Woof, and the tax bracket to go with it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you find time to train during the day when you're out traveling like this, Triple H? Do you actually go to the gym when you're traveling? With this kind of extensive routine, how do you keep yourself in shape? Because you're in extraordinary shape every time we see you.
Yeah, you try as best as you can. That's probably the hardest part of our job is physically staying ahead of everything, you know, and trying to be in the best shape you can. And diet-wise, as you know, when you're on the road, is is difficult sometimes when you get done a show and it's 2 in the morning. There's not a whole lot of options of places to get something good to eat. But, you know, you do the best you can with that. And as far as training, you know, just the good thing now is, as opposed to 30 years ago, is there's pretty much a gym everywhere.
When did you decide that you were going to be a wrestler, Triple H? Who did you watch on the TV set that caused you to be compelled to do this?
I watched the biggest influence on me was probably Ric Flair, who still wrestles today. And you know, for the last couple of years, I've been working with regularly, so I've been around on a regular basis. So that's a lot of fun for me. It's like kind of getting to go out on stage with your hero, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But he was a big influence on me growing up, and I think I knew I wanted to be involved in wrestling at a very young age. I just didn't think it was something that really could happen. About 18 or 19, 20, that time frame, I started thinking I can really make this a career, you know.
Were you an athlete before you got into world wrestling, Triple H? Were you involved in football or sports, intramural, anything in schools like this?
No, I never played football. You know, I played baseball and basketball. But when I hit 14, I started bodybuilding in the gym. And I think, you know, between the larger-than-life guys in wrestling and the size of bodybuilders and stuff was very impressive to me. And you know, that's what I wanted to be. So I started going to the gym, and I got really involved in going to the gym, and bodybuilding became a way of life for me, which as I got bigger, you know, as I got to be 19, 20 years old, I started to see, like, well, this could be a reality because I am big enough to do this.
Gotcha. I'm talking to Triple H, WWE here. Triple H, what is your finishing move? What is your favorite move? Do you have a name for it?
Yeah, my finish is called the Pedigree.
And can you describe that to us, please?
Yeah, it's kind of like a pile driver. If I have a guy's head between my knees and I hook his arms behind his back and drive his face into the mat.
Oh, that's what Warner Brothers has been doing to me for 20 years.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
I didn't know.
I think they were doing that from behind, though, weren't they?
Yeah, don't back up severe tire damage in the music industry here. I remember as a kid, I must have coconut butted on behalf of Bobo Brazil, half of my classmates. And then throughout the 80s, I launched myself off of many amplifier tops on stage in an effort to at least simulate the 460 moonsault from the top rope, etc.
You were the innovator of that stuff, Dave, as you were, you know, swinging off vines and you know, jumping off speaker towers. We were watching you thinking, I could do that in a ring.
And now history comes full circle here.
There you go.
When you're talking, we're talking about the different storylines, and the storylines that I've seen you involved with are astonishingly cool. Who arrives at the storylines? Are you involved with this, or does somebody hand you a script, or do you sit in a circle, or where do you do this kind of planning?
It's kind of a collaborative process. You know, we have writers. We have a whole team of writers that come up with different ideas and scenarios. A lot of the wrestlers themselves, you know, as they get more experienced, will give ideas and will have create a lot of creative input. But the final decision comes down to Vince McMahon. You know, Vince McMahon is the president of the company. He's the chairman, and
he's also your father-in-law.
Exactly, my father-in-law. But so the decisions come down to him. Nothing happens on our programming that he doesn't approve.
Oh, so he's playing the P.T. Barnum part. There's the leader. Okay.
He is definitely the modern-day P.T. Barnum.
Gotcha. Do you like playing bad guys or good guys better?
Oh, I'm a bad guy all the way through.
That was a quick answer.
Yeah. I've had a couple of times in my career where they've liked me, and it's been short-lived, you know.
Boy, tell me. Sometimes good guys don't wear white, huh?
No, exactly.
How about being married? How does this work when you're on the road for so many shows? Because you talk about 200 and change shows. That doesn't account for travel days, sleep days, hospital days. And I'm just describing my boring routine.
Yeah.
How do you stay married and create a family and maintain something like that? Or does she go with you?
The lucky thing for me is I'm married to Vince's daughter, and that she's heavily involved in the business. She's part of the creative process. She's an executive in the company. You know, during the week I don't see her as much, but on the weekend, I'm on the weekdays of Monday and Tuesday when we shoot our television show, she's always there. So then, you know, we have those days together, and then there's a couple of days a week where I'm at home, and then, you know, the rest of the time I'm gone. Sometimes she comes with me on the road. Just like you guys do, I have a tour bus and
You have the full tour bus routine? I call it a disco submarine. So you've got the full float there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How long have you had that?
I actually just got it this year. Up until now, it's always been planes and rent-a-cars. And I just got it this year because my wife is pregnant. We're going to have our first child in July, and you know, I don't want to miss him growing up, so we're going to just bring him with us.
That makes sense to me. What's a handicap match? Can you explain that?
Handicap match basically when guys are outnumbered. So this Saturday at Saturday Night's main event, cheap plug, which is on at 8 p.m. on NBC. We're going to have a handicap. It's going to be myself and John Cena, who is the WWE champion and happens to be the man that I'm facing at WrestleMania 22 on pay-per-view, April 2nd, second cheap plug.
They're not cheap. Go ahead.
And we're going to wrestle Kurt Angle, who's the world champion, Rey Mysterio, and Randy Orton. So it's 3-on-2, and that's basically a handicap match. We're at a disadvantage. There's only two of us, and there's three of them.
Gotcha. Saw you in Blade Trinity. How are you planning to do more films coming up? Is this something that's a pursuit for you?
You know, I'm going to see. It's kind of wrestling is kind of my big focus. I still enjoy it so much, and I still am into it so much that it's, you know, it's hard to go make a movie. You're gone for 3 to 6 months, and you know, they, when I did Blade, they allowed me to wrestle and do the movie at the same time. I would do, you know, a few days of each, but most times they won't let you do that, so you have to be gone, and it's hard for me at the position I'm in the business right now to walk away for 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, and somebody,
unless it was a really great project, I would have a hard time doing that.
Somebody in your position with your kind of a grounded spirit, you sound like a really well-grounded guy here. Geez, you do 3-4 movies, you could wind up governor of California or something.
Yeah,
crazy, right?
They don't even have to be that good.
Clearly. I knew Jesse Ventura. I saw him many, many times when he was wrestling. We trained at the same gym, Vince's gym in Los Angeles. And look, he went on to become a governor as well.
Yeah.
And this is interesting. Do you count yourself as a role model for kids?
You know, I it's a controversial subject. I think that kids obviously look at things that they see on TV, and that's kind of an influence on their life. But I hate to say role model. I think parents should be the role models. I think something that's shown on television that can be a negative, if it's presented in the right way, can be a positive. It's just as easy to tell your kid, see that right there? You never do that.
I understand. And also, you know, what you're representing in the ring is clearly what we see on the movie screen, and
sure,
particularly what kids get in graphic novels. I don't even call them comic books anymore.
Yeah. Well, and quite honestly, we give them much less than that. We, you know, none of our storylines are murder or rape or anything like that. You know, it's you know, it's wrestling in the reality of it. I mean, sometimes we do some edgy things, but for the most part, you know, we do a lot less really heavy storylines than you would see on any primetime TV show or any, you know, primetime movie.
There's usually a happy finish to what you guys are doing, whether it takes a few episodes or not, you know.
Oh,
good,
sure.
Conquers evil, love rules the world, and
yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's, you know, that's the thing of our show. You know,
well, yes, love will rule the world as long as you're 6'5" and 300 pounds with a 38-inch bicep, right?
Right, yeah. and I mean, you know, there's good and there's bad, you know, like you said, most times in our business, good wins, and not every time, but most times good wins, and it's just good storytelling. It's good fun, you know, and I think the only people that have a problem with what we do are the people that take it too seriously. We don't take it that seriously. It's a very tongue-in-cheek. We know what we are.
Triple H, WWE, this was a spectacular interview. Good luck to you in your next main event.
Thanks, man.
God bless. Have a great day.
Good luck with your show.
Thank you so much.
All right.
David Lee Roth on 92.3 Free FM.
Live for the moment,
the moment,
the moment,
the moment,
and others who don't seem to get much enjoyment,
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 enjoyment.
Some are always glad,
others always sad,
but lately,
lately,
seems that I've been
somewhere in between.
It's a funny feeling,
love is what I mean. Yes, I'm so in love, can't tell down from up above, down, down, down from up above.
I feel like singing. I feel like singing.
Love, that's where I'm at. Love that makes me scared. 3, 3, 3, 3, 3. love.
Yes, it's love that's got me
somewhere in between.
Woo. And it's love that's made me a pauper or a king.
I don't know which one, but it sure is fun. Fun, 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 fun.
I feel like singing, singing.
Добро пожаловать в клуб, Дэйв. Мы здесь вам позволяем говорить только «Добро пожаловать!» Rough, 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 rough radio.
All right. Okay, here we go. It's just some of the quick news here coming off of page 6. George Clooney is furious at Arianna Huffington for making it look like he blogged on her Huffington Post website. On Monday, a blog criticizing Democrats, that sounds like, ostensibly written by Clooney, was posted on the site. But it turns out the quotes were compiled from Clooney interviews. Miss Huffington's blog is purposely misleading, Clooney said yesterday. She responded that Clooney's rep okayed the blog and insisted, but there was an honest misunderstanding. Okay, it's not a misunderstanding. It was a misrepresentation that evidently he actually said it, but that it was in several different interviews. I wonder if he's planning to sue. George, you're out of control. Come on, man. We talked about Willis was threatened to sue the Post because of they said that he had asked somebody for a phone number. Willis, get over it. Come on, babe. Okay, here's a news item here. Marijuana is again tied to memory problems. Actually, I can't find the page here, so we'll just... Hey, they can't all be good jokes, not this early here. Just kidding. People who regularly smoke marijuana may find their memories growing hazy over time, a study published Monday suggests. In a study of long-term and shorter-term marijuana users, researchers in Greece found that both groups performed more poorly on tests of memory, attention, and other cognitive abilities than a comparison group who only occasionally used the drug. You know, I participated in a study that was much like this back in the early 80s, and we were called up, I was called actually, as part of a canine psychotherapy process. It was called an encounter. It was not an experiment. And what they did is they arranged in a controlled environment, an empty room is what it actually was. They took what was like pickup sticks, okay, like drumsticks. And they threw probably, there were close to 200 drumsticks, like they looked like drumsticks, on the floor. And there was a fellow who was an architect. There was a fellow who was an accountant. And then I was, you know, I'm the musician, whatever. We were all called and requested to bring our dogs. At the time, I had a pit bull terrier. The fellow who was the attorney, I forget, the accountant, I forget what his dog was. I forget the breed. But he put his dog in the room, and in the space of about, I think it was a given 15 minutes, the dog had separated the sticks into equal little piles. It's, I guess, you know, like an accountant reference or whatever. Five sticks here, five sticks there, five sticks there. Okay. The fella who was an architect brought in a smaller house pet. It was a dog. I forget what breed it was. And they left the dog in the room for 15 minutes. And curiously enough, it arranged the sticks into what looked like a geometric design. In fact, if you looked at it from the right angle, it was almost architectural. It looked kind of like a house. And my dog was 15 minutes late, screwed all the other dogs, and left 15 minutes early. I wonder if Bosco was smoking marijuana. It's a hell of a time to say. Okay, here's the biggest news, is what's going on with the suit against CBS facing $3.6 million fines. The government proposed a record fine of $3.6 mil against dozens of CBS stations and affiliates Wednesday in a crackdown on what regulators call indecent television programming. Let me continue. The Federal Communication Commission said a network program Without a Trace, for example, that aired in December 2004 was indecent. It cited the graphic depiction of teenage boys and girls participating in a sexual orgy. Where was I, huh? The proposed fine was among decisions from the agency stemming from more than 300,000 complaints it received concerning nearly 50 TV shows broadcast between 2002 and 2005. All right. One of the biggest was the $550,000 fine against 20 of the network stations for the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl 2 years ago. This is fascinating. I'm going to continue here. Nicole Richie uttered the F word and a common vulgarity for excrement. Okay. And there's fines for this. Also, Cher uttered the F word. All right. I'm just going to lump in a little extra. What about censorship here? Damon Wayans is denied. Damon Wayans, while all of this is going on the TV with CBS, he's refused again today for a trademark on the word. I can't say it's the N word for African Americans. Can I even spell this on the air? Am I allowed to spell the N word? Because he tried to trademark this. It's N-I. You know how it goes, okay? But he finishes it with a G-G-A, like you read in Source Magazine or anywhere else. It's a homeboy term. It's not the racist thing. Go ahead, Animal.
I can tell you where you can say it, you can get rid of it. It's called Negroid. You can say that.
Regardless, I can't say it as well as you can. But he tried to trademark the word by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Wayans was hoping to start a clothing line called the N-word, but was refused the name because of an act of Congress that made it illegal. All right, if he went and said this as his clothing line, and it's spelled not with the E-R, but with the G-G-A-H or G-G-A-Z or however you see it spelled in most hip-hop magazines, and you see it hundreds of times there, is this going to get him fined by the FCC? Is this going to get him hammered on television? Can he say this kind of thing on cable? Is it okay to do these kinds of things on cable, or is this FCC going to start dipping into this? Because I've been reading that, they've got long arms. They're reaching out for what's happening on satellite now. Okay, let's just start with the Janet Jackson issue. $550,000. Her little bosom is not worth $500,000. Do you think? And don't they have like a ducker switch? Don't they have, aren't they on like a time delay? Come on, they put us on a 3 week time delay. Everybody upstairs was so wondering, is Roth going to swear? Is the subject matter going to be whatever? So we've got a real long delay. What happened with Janet Jackson? Did it just punch through? Did you see it on the TV?
Yeah, I saw it. It was so quick you couldn't even see it. Actually, I mean, it was like a snap of a finger or a flash of an eyelash, man.
Is that because they turned the camera away or they just ducked the camera?
No. He just walked up, grabbed it like this, and snatched it off, and she put it back up. I'm telling you, it was so quick you couldn't even really tell. It was a nipple, man.
Yeah, but my question was, did that go on the ducker switch? Did they beep it out?
It was on TV.
Okay, so it was directly sent ahead. Well, then that's the fault of the guy from the television, is it not? Because you know that artists are going to push the envelope. You know that we're going to take chances. And if you're really that concerned, then why wouldn't you install the duck switch? That's what we call it here, right? What do you call it?
Well, you know what? Getting back to what you said, I think this whole thing was planned. And didn't they switch the lights off right afterwards on that stage?
I'm sure that it was planned.
They did. They should have had some kind of ducker switch, but I'm figuring that the lighting would have been the equivalent of the ducker switch.
I don't think they were doing the Apache dance like at the end of a striptease in the 1920s, where you take off a little more of the dance of a thousand veils, your wife would call it, Hutch.
She does that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It's not a case where, she's taking off more and more and more, and finally the reveal and lights out, okay? Right. That's a classic old Lily St. Cyr striptease fan dance kind of an approach. They may have planned it like that, but what are the characters behind the scenes, the producers and the directors behind the scenes, really thinking? Come on. Okay, it's the Super Bowl or whatever, but nevertheless, look at the company you're keeping, okay? And there's a huge track record for this, all right? Look, you get somebody like Cher, who stands up and utters the F word. You know this is going to be a premeditated thing. Even if she just thought of it, that's what's going to get you the attention. Isn't that, you use that word and it sort of says, I'm alternative. I live outside the normal bounds. I'm left of center. I'm downtown. I spiritually live where the bus doesn't come after dark anymore, right? Especially somebody like Cher. You've got to know. that woman is going to push the envelope a little bit. Whoopi Goldberg, same thing. Great, great comedy, great humor. You know that she's going to push the edge a little bit. So why don't you just wake up and install the Ducker switch, okay? Just like we do on radio or anything else. And you got Cher do this. How many times have we watched Bono do this kind of a trick? How long are we going to continue to reflex like a bunch of homeroom teachers back in the early 60s here? Bono uses it. How many times have we watched Slash do it? Okay? It's almost a given. You hire Slash, you get the F word and a cigarette being smoked in the wrong place, right?
That you mean wrong place. I remember one time we was going overseas and Slash fired up a cigarette on the plane. He was like sleeping, just woke up and forgot where he was and just fired it up, man.
No, see, I take
all over the plane.
I take issue with that. He did not fire. He did not forget where he was. That is Slash's act. That is his routine. I am alternative. I am downtown. I drop me off down below 14th Street. That's what that says.
But it didn't make the headlines, though. They kept it hush hush.
Yeah, well, he's been doing it for so long that nobody blinks an eye. It ain't headlines anymore.
Nothing new.
No, and now you've got the new crop. You got the Nicole Richies, and I'm sure that the Lohans and the Britneys are going to reach for this as well. And if you don't just swear, then just have a girl kiss a girl, and everybody is going to again reflex, go combustible. You follow what I'm saying here. I want to take some phone calls on this in a minute. 866-313-3733. The fines, as I read it, are going to the television stations. The fines are being levied on the producers, so to speak. My big issue here is, you know what these celebutards are going to do on stage. Come on. It's a habit. Now, it's a given. You throw a country western show, a cowboy hat is going to walk in the front door. When you put up Slash or one of the Janet Jacksons or somebody, something colorful, something left of center, something sexy is bound to happen. That's why you continually re-invite them. What is the problem here with just hitting the censor switch? Hit the button once. No $500,000 fine, and maybe a fella could get lucky, and next year she'll show us the other one.
David Lee Roth, 92.3 Free FM.
Love you. Love you. Love you. Love you.
Well, all I've learned from history, and careful how you take it, is recognize the same mistake every time we make it. How many times are we going to continue to make this mistake here with the censorship issue? I got a question. If the channels themselves are allowing this stuff to creep through so that there's an unexpected quality to the television shows, do they know exactly how much the fines are going to be? It used to be $32,000 per incident, and then they tried to raise it up to $500,000 or whatever, especially after the Janet Jackson issue, all right? There was a whole lot of clamor, and it went on for 2 years, and then it sort of fizzled out in Congress. But now, here it is, rearing its ugly little head again. Do we blame the artists? Or do we blame the people with the television show for not having the ducker switch, just like you do on radio, just like you do anywhere? You hit the button, duck the word, because you know that people are going to reach for the word. It's your credibility. You wear it like a belt buckle, especially for somebody like Cher. You know, people go, well, I don't know if she's hip anymore. I don't know if she's cool anymore. All she does is get up, make the F word, and you go, wow, she's cool enough to do that. I wish my mom could do that. Yeah. Wow, wow, wow. 866-313-3733. Roth Radio, D-Row, you're talking to me. Go ahead, friend.
Hey, how are you?
What do you think about this issue? Should they be fining these channels, or is the channel responsible, or should we blame these artists and musicians?
Well, here's my whole point, okay? These channels, they know what they're doing. They're not stupid. We all know sex sells. We all know people tune into that. So they know they're about to be fined for whatever they're doing, okay? My point is, the fine, I'm sure, feels in comparison to their ratings, to what they make on people tuning in to view these shows.
So you're saying that they allow this stuff to creep through, supposedly. Geez, we didn't know that was going to happen, and it allows us to get a little extra taste of that which we're not supposed to experience, and that brings us back to the channel, and to hell with it, they'll pay their
exactly.
losses later. You think that?
How many people tuned in to see Janet Jackson on whatever channel she was on just to get a glimpse of it? You know, I think they know exactly what they're doing, and I'm sure, like, again, it feels in comparison, I'm sure, to their ratings or to what they rake in on whatever, pay for you, whatever it may be.
You got a really good point there. Thanks for giving us a call.
No problem. That's good work.
Thank you. 866-313-3733. I hadn't thought that. I thought, you know, okay, either this channel isn't that bright, and they're just going, they're expecting, okay, we'll let this slide, you know, and everything will be cool. We'll just hold our breath, close our eyes, and, you know, we'll land where we're supposed to, all right? Also, do you blame the artist, the musician? Should they be the fined ones? Because you could cut it out pretty quick. If an individual brings up that word or says whatever, here's how much Janet's going to pay. You show a body part, well, how much is one boob worth? Evidently, it's a $500,000 breast job there. Or at least it's a $500,000 nipple ring, huh? Next call, Hutch. Roth Radio, you're talking in New York. Go ahead.
Yeah. David?
Yes, sir.
It would stop very quickly if these people were called entertainers. They're not entertainers, to use the F word. There's very few entertainers. These are just singers that have no bearing to be on TV.
Okay, perhaps you may be correct in terms of some of these singers, okay? But there are a lot of great authors who've used the F word, okay? There's a lot of great theater, a lot of great Broadway, there's a lot of great movies, etc., that have employed the use of the F word. It's like a great exclamation point. You want to get people's attention. That's frequently the best way to do it. You agree or disagree?
I agree in certain cases.
Okay,
there's only one movie I have ever seen that the swear words were necessary.
Which one was that?
And that's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Oh, okay. Well, you're...
Because it was said in anger, and it went right over your heads, but that's what people would talk like when they were angry at somebody.
Okay, well, what about movies like The Godfather, Goodfellas, The Sopranos? What about pictures? What about authors like Henry Miller, Hunter Thompson? The list is long, my friend.
Those are good authors.
Yeah. And
they were very good authors.
And they use profanity frequently, if not constantly.
In certain cases, yes.
Okay, same thing for the beatniks, you know, the beat authors. And you hear it in a lot of different kinds of music. And you hear it behind the scenes in the fabrication of all this kind of theater and music from all of the directors and producers and everybody, particularly in this industry, in radio. Every third word is F this and, you know, that's S.
I haven't heard it on your station.
No, because, you know, we have the regulations here. And I'd like to think that I could insult people just as colorfully without being limited to a few
right.
special
you
words.
You can insult a person without a swear word.
Okay.
You can talk sensibly without a swear word.
Okay.
And that's what people should understand. Swearing doesn't mean anything.
Well, it does when somebody gets up on channel and they just blurt it out. You get sort of a credibility for it. You get like a what would you call that? A merit badge of sorts. You
become. I know that. I've been to concerts where that's where the first word that comes out of their mouth is that F word. But that doesn't make them a good entertainer.
I agree with you.
And it's just because you say it doesn't mean that you're something good. Anybody can swear, use it. That's the big problem. Anybody can use it.
Yeah, especially 12-year-olds. Is that what I'm seeing on these stages? Is that people are reduced to a 12-year-old mentality as soon as they get into the spotlight?
In a lot of cases, yes.
Even though
they're 55 years old.
You know, one of my Spanish teachers, Rosa, from the South Bronx, asked me once, she said, how come people swear so much, especially down in the neighborhoods where I live? Because every third word is F this and F that. I says, baby, that's the words that you use when you don't have any other words in your vocabulary.
Okay, and it also loses its meaning. That's the bad part.
It loses its impact. You start to use the word for 95 different meanings.
That's right. It loses it. When I was in the Army, the swear word F was used in the barracks. It was called barracks talk.
Okay. And was it ever used by the DIs, by the drill instructors?
Very seldom. They weren't allowed to swear. They didn't swear at us.
And when they did use it, did you not pay very strict attention?
That's right. But the deal is, when you left the barracks and went uptown, the word was not used anymore.
Okay, so who would you sue for this? Who would you fine for this, my friend? Would you fine the artists who go ahead and blurt this out, or would you fine the television stations who allow it to go through?
When they go on TV, if I was a television station, I would tell them, you use the word, you're going to be fined. Me, who's the producer of the show, plus the FCC. And that's it.
And you would have them sign a contract, perhaps, and they would know exactly this much for this word, this much for that word.
That's right. And it'd stop it right then.
Well, I'm afraid that makes way too much sense. That would be way too easy to do. That would be way too inexpensive, and that just wouldn't be showbiz, my friend. Thanks for calling anyway.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for taking my call, David.
866-313-3733. What do you think of that? Well, you got something to say?
Oh, I was just thinking about her boob and stuff, and I know anybody that's my age, they have seen Wild Kingdom, right? And, Wild Kingdom was full of boobs, man, and nobody sued Wild Kingdom, man, because Marlon Perkins, every time you saw his show, was always a chick in the back with the boobs hanging out. You know what I'm saying?
It's certainly a great reason for watching National Geographic.
Yeah, it's driven, man. You know, that's why I watched it, just to see the nakedness, man, you know.
Okay, so what do you think of what Janet did? Was that just pure showbiz? She should be fine for that. She knew what she was doing.
I think it was just showbiz because it came off, and can you think of a costume like that with a Velcro patch over your boob come off? Unless you're Little Kim. Remember when she showed up on some red carpet? I don't remember. Her entire boobs was hanging out, but she had tassels over her nipples and nobody cared.
Oh, well, that was the one where Diana Ross walked up and grabbed her, right?
Yeah, that's the one. And nobody cared.
Like
man.
A stalker, she grabbed her. This is a multi-dimensional lawsuit looking for a place to happen here.
Yeah.
Next call, please. Roth Radio. Who's there?
David, what's up? I got a question for you. Everybody concentrates on these commercials during the Super Bowl, and it costs $2.7 million per commercial, per minute, right?
Gotcha.
So if they're actually charging them $500,000, they just paid their fine in 15 seconds.
I think you've got an excellent point. So what you're saying is that they're mongering excellent show business.
Well, I think they should do a lot more of it. And, for $2.7 million, maybe we can find something interesting on TV nowadays instead of all this PG stuff.
Let's increase the heat. I like the way you think. God bless. Have a great day. Roth Radio, increasing the heat. Find me. We're going to see you all tomorrow. God bless.
Swing it out, man. Now I'm back, now you
Roth in the mornings. 92.3 Free FM.